Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Farewell to the Welfare State right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights, but we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? And bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and Zoning and Planning, or the IRS and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this thing called private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're reviewing the privateer, number 633. Privateer number 633, remember, it's put out by a guy by the name of William A.M. Buckler, comes out of Queensland, Australia. 12-page publication, comes out twice a month, 25 issues a year, $144, I think I calculated the other day, in U.S. funds, $180 Australian. Worth every dime. I try to read as many issues as I can get my hands on. And I thought I would promote it, not for Mr. Buckler's benefit, but for yours. After all, Buckler already knows the answer to the riddle. What I wanted to do was to put the information out there so that Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife can share in this answer to the riddle. The mainstream press keeps selling hope, and hope in stimulus, hope in a turnaround in the world economy, hope in the turnaround in your economy wherever you live in the world. But that hope is based upon nonsense. It's based upon wild speculation that everybody in the know knows doesn't have a prayer of a chance of success. Now, they've staved off the final collapse for a little while longer. Maybe that's a good thing. I wouldn't say that it's bad, but it has postponed the inevitable. Now, his issue number 633 deals with farewell to the welfare state. That doesn't mean that socialism is going to disappear and that gold and silver coin is coming back and that the Federal Reserve is going to be abolished and the federal income tax is going to be repealed. None of the above. If you think you've seen tyranny so far, you haven't dreamed of what tyranny is really like. Change, you bet, change is coming. Boy, are we going to see change. And it leaves us little guys down here at the bottom of the pond, you know, the bottom feeders, as I call them, in a world of hurt. The rich people, like Henry Kissinger and George Bush, they don't have a worry in the world. Those guys just sit back and relax. They can take care of themselves. The very poorest people in society are going to take it in the shorts, because the people that are actually supporting the rich and the poor are the middle class, and they're the ones that are being destroyed right now, worldwide. And when this middle class is destroyed, these concepts of tax the rich are nonsense. The rich don't pay taxes. Corporations don't pay taxes. The rich collect the taxes from their customers and pay it over to the government. There's a symbiotic relationship that goes on between business and government. It's called fascism in politics. And this fascist model is being imposed upon the entire world. The rich men of the earth will howl, as the Bible says, at a point in time, because of the destruction of their invention, this world order, this new world order, world government. Now, mankind has been on a road toward world government since the last one was formed at the Tower of Babel. God destroyed it, scattered the people abroad, and said, now look what these people begin to do. Now, you just take a look at what the world is doing today. We've repeated this Tower of Babel experiment, and it's about to come to a no good end again. So for the little guys down here at the bottom, we need a solution. I don't know whether the solution is going to be out there to solve the problem for millions and millions of people or just a few thousand. I'm not complaining about the taxation. I'm not one of those that's complaining about shortages or complaining about the economy. Students come in here and they're lamenting. Oftentimes people will call on the telephone and say, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I'm not one of those. I'm not complaining about it. I'm not of the super wealthy. I'm not one of the rich men of the earth. But I can make a buck, and I know how to save a buck, and I know how to multiply a buck, and I know how to provide for myself. And I've been teaching my students how to do that for 25 years, and I'd like to show you how to do that. It ain't impossible, but there's another model out here. There's a different model than this New World Order model. It's called the Ten Commandment model. On planet Earth, there's only two models that I can think of, or that I know of, or that I've ever heard of. One is this model called from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. We call it communism. In ancient times, it was called the Babylonian mystery religion. The Egyptians, Romans, Greeks, the Assyrians, nearly everybody, every great empire in the world has tested the socialist philosophy. Hitler did it during the Second World War. He called it Nazism. Mussolini called it fascism. Here in America, we call it capitalism. And it encompasses an income tax. That's where you tax people directly on their labor. That's the second plank. The tenth plank calls for free education for all children in public school. That's indoctrination. That's been going on for a long time. Central banking, that is fiat currency, bad money, unjust weights and balances. That's the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And when we look at these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and then we compare them with the Ten Commandments, we see these two starkly different models. So I wanted to suggest to you that you think about this Ten Commandment model. Our founding fathers here in the United States and Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, all put it to great effect, put it into effect, and it worked like a shot. And you people down in Australia created a hell of a monster economy down there, you know, for the few people that are down there. You Canadians have done a hell of a job. We here in America, we did a little better than the rest of you. You people in Great Britain didn't have a problem. But after about 1900, we got off on a wild track. We got a wild hair up our hinies. And that wild hair, that Communist Manifesto, this socialist monstrosity took hold. And we've been following this socialist monstrosity ever since. Now, it sounds good. Everybody likes it. Everybody subscribes to it. It's a philosophy where we're going to share the wealth. We're going to let Joe, Bob, and Bill over here produce it, and then Tom, Dick, and Harry are going to share in that wealth. When you do that, the producers stop producing, and that's where we're at today. When you get off on this unjust weights and balances thing to an extreme, your economy collapses. All right, so let's take a look here at the Global Market Report. Now, remember, this comes from the privateer. Get your pen and paper out here. This comes from A.M. Buckler, Bill Buckler. P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. And I think that's P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia, 4567 is probably the zip code. They've got a web page. It's www.the-privateer.com. Easy one. The-privateer.com. Email is capt@the-privateer.com. Phone is 617-5471-1960. That's 617-5471-1960. Now, I'm trying to sell Bill Buckler's privateer newsletter. He doesn't pay me to do that. I'm doing it for free. It's called a private market letter for the individual capitalist. Private newsletter. Worth every penny, about 180 bucks Australian. It's about $150 American. You know, translate that into whatever currency you've got around the world and give him a call. Call him on the telephone. Send him an email. See if he'll send you a sample copy. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But it's a mind-blowing experience twice a month. I mean, mind-blowing. We're on page 10, the Global Market Report, from the cradle to the grave. The welfare state has been defined as a model in which the state assumes primary responsibility for the welfare of its citizens. The cradle of the welfare state goes as far back as history records. Its grave, in the case of a single nation or group of nations, has come with the collapse of empire or by defeat in war. But the idea of a welfare state, whether it's imposed by complete or partial state control over private life, socialism, communism, or economic interventionism, it has never died. And the central theme running through all of the economic and political history, two threads which have always been intertwined, is that the prosperity of any given nation is in inverse proportion to the degree that it accepts the welfare state. And that's not to say now that the more communism you accept, the better your standard of living is going to be. That is to say, the more of this socialism that you accept, the longer you can stand in line to share the shortage. Now, that's always been the history of communism, or the Babylonian mystery religion, or Nazism, or capitalism. See, we hang these labels on it. We call what we're doing here today capitalism. That's nonsense. We Americans practice the income tax, the second plank, Social Security, the eighth plank, public school, the tenth plank, central banking, the fifth plank, income tax, or excuse me, the inheritance tax, the third plank. Hey, we have adopted all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and our standard of living has dropped by 50%, and that's why mom is working in the workplace. And mom and dad together in 2009 cannot earn the same standard of living that my dad earned in 1955 working by himself with mom at home. Now, let me give you, I'm going to parenthetically insert a little story here. Let me give you an example of that. In 1945, my granddad was earning $1.75 an hour. Now, he was the yard superintendent at Northern Redwood Lumber Company. Now, he was making above average wages. And I don't know what the average wage was in those days, but my guess would be probably a dollar. I suspect minimum wage was probably 90 cents, something on that order. Well, my granddad was making good money. And when he would give me a dime, I could go down to the ice cream store there in Corbell, put my dime on the counter, and the lady behind the counter would give me a double-decker ice cream cone. Two scoops of ice cream on a cone. Cost me one thin silver dime. Now, the other day, I happened to be in TCBY, and I bought two scoops of ice cream in a cup, and it cost me $2.35. Now, the wages today are about $17.58 an hour here in the States, and wages in 1945 were about $1.75. So we're making 10 times more money. But when you divide 10 cents into $2.35, we find that it costs 23 and a half times more money to buy that 10-cent ice cream cone. Now, John Maynard Keynes made this observation back in the early 1930s. He said, not one person in 10,000 can identify the problem with inflation. Can't identify, don't know. Well, there's 300 million Americans here, and if that statement is true, only 30,000 people in America understand inflation. The other 299,970,000 think that they understand it. And there might be a bunch more that think that they can understand it. But the truth of the matter is, today Americans believe they're better off than they've ever been in their lives. They go to public school. They go out in the marketplace, they get a degree from college, and God, they're just happy as clams at high tide. Now, just using the ice cream cone as an example, $2.35, if we divide that into $17.58 divided by $2.35, it divides in there 7.48. That's about 7.5 times. So you're making 7.5 times the purchasing power of the $2.35. In other words, you can buy about 7.5 of these double-decker ice cream cones today. Now, when we compare that to $1.75 and a dime, that was 17.5, and today I can get 7.5. I have lost in purchasing power 10 ice cream cones. Can you see that? So between 1945 and 2009, we have lost 10 ice cream cones in purchasing power. We've lost way more than 50% of our purchasing power, and that's just with one item, ice cream. In 1945, you could have bought an automobile for $1,200, a brand new one. Today, it costs you $20,000. Costs you, you know, maybe push it 15 times more. Now, those are important things to be considering over here, because this is what's coming down on us. First of all, they're calling it deflation. There's no deflation going on out there. There's only inflation. There's a temporary price decline, but that's not deflation. Price declines over here are not the way to measure inflation or deflation. The way we measure it is the money supply. And what we've done is we have created $29 trillion worth of new money out there, new money and guarantees for new money. They might not have printed it yet, but they promised it. If AIG needs more money, we're just going to print it and put it out into circulation. Same thing with General Motors, Chrysler, Goldman Sachs, or anybody else, Bank of America. We're just going to print it up and send it out. Now, that's going to have an economic consequence. And as already stated in the global report in this issue, deflations in our times are credit and monetary. So are the inflations which must precede them. And so it is that the welfare state, which cannot exist in anything but the most rudimentary form unless the government which administers this bureaucracy is not limited to what it can raise directly from its citizens to pay for it. A welfare state subsisting entirely on tax revenues is a contradiction in terms. If for no other reason, this is true because the bureaucracy which must administer any such state is a dead weight on the economic system that it's administering. And that's because the welfare state produces no real wealth. The cost of the welfare state is directly borne by those who it purports to serve. And unless a means is found to defer the cost, the bureaucracy will itself absorb the means necessary to provide the welfare. Let's think about that for a minute, because Buckler hit the nail right on the head. The bureaucracy, that is your government, produces nothing and they consume much in the process. Government has absolutely nothing to give because it produces absolutely nothing. Name one thing that government produces. Name it. Send me an email. Let me know what it is. Now, the bottom line is, the government comes along and purports to be supporting the elderly through Social Security. And the government isn't producing any wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. They are producing money that they send out to these people who then come into the Walmart store and buy the wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. The producers who produce the wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil have their wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil to take home, but a portion of it is taken from them and given to these welfare recipients and the bureaucrats that administer it. So the burden is borne by the producers in every single case and without exception. Now the producers around the world are the people that actually produce the wheat, the corn, the beans, the honey, the oil. But they don't get to keep 100% of what they produce because they've been induced to join a program. The government came out and said, wouldn't you like to join this retirement program? Just pay a little bit in and you get a whole bunch back. That's getting something for nothing. That's what they advertise. And from 1935 to about 1970, it worked, at least for Social Security and at least here in the United States. But starting about 1970, you could not get out as much as you paid in. And that's where I'm at today. If I were drawing Social Security, which I am not, but if I were, I could not get out as much as I paid in. So I looked at that some years ago and I said, well, now that we've reached the way past the balancing point, to give you an illustration as to where you're at today in the welfare state, let's suppose that you're an upper crust. You're a doctor, a dentist, or somebody that's making $100,000 a year and you're paying the maximum tax. You're in the top 5% of income earners. And you're paying in the maximum tax rate, which is around $80,000 a year. You're paying it on $80,000 a year. So you're paying 16% of this $80,000 a year. Let's try it out. 80 times 0.16 is $12,800 times 45 years is $576,000 you're going to pay in your lifetime. And how much are you going to get back? You're going to get $1,200 a month back for 120 months because you're going to die on average at age 75. So take 12,000 times 10 years, you're going to get back 120,000 out of 576,000. So you get to pay in, you know, way up past $5 million, and you're going to get paid back 120,000 of it. You're going to get back about one-fifth what you paid in. You're going to pay in a dollar and get 20 cents back. Now, that's where you're at today. Middle-class workers do a little bit better than that. And the poor people, they get back a higher percentage, less dollars, but a higher percentage. And the bureaucracy rakes in all of the profits that come off of this. I mean, there's a humongous profit off of that. Take a look. You guys out there that went to college and you're real smart and you got pieces of paper that tell us all how smart you are. Over the course of your lifetime, you're going to pay in getting close to $6 million. And you're going to get back $100,000 of it. And you tell me that you're real smart. You may be a great lawyer, a great real estate salesman. You may be a wonderful doctor, but you can't count. You've been through the educational process and you're unable to do simple arithmetic. You're unable to figure out what's in your own best interest. Now, when your government takes, $6 million, excuse me, 576,000. Let me get down here, I'm getting ahead of myself, 576,000, and they give you back 120,000 out of this. What is that, what does that tell you? Huh? That ought to tell you that you're getting screwed. That's what it tells you. Now, the bureaucracy has been able to sell this because of inflation. See, you guys are making $30, $40, $50 an hour, and you're mesmerized by your hourly rate. But you don't understand the price of ice cream. And that's where you're getting screwed. Then you have to put your wife to work, and she's out here in the marketplace, and she's also paying those same taxes to those same bureaucrats to support this bureaucracy. Now, the reason that Buckler is telling us that this thing is going to fall of its own weight, it's going to collapse, is because the tax revenue is falling. But the bureaucracy is not going to disappear. Going on, he said, the key to the existence of welfare states is that a way has been found to defer the costs, to push them into the future, to be faced by the young and the generations yet unborn. Governments simply allocate to themselves a monopoly of what is to be used as money. When they've done that, they debase that money. The signal feature of our modern welfare state is that the debasement of money has been pushed to a point which was not possible in the past. Today, all money is based on and backed by debt. For almost four decades, no circulating money anywhere has had any connection to economic reality in the form of gold. Now, here's the stark contrast, California versus Washington, D.C. California is hamstrung because it cannot constitutionally run a budget deficit. Washington, D.C. has not run a balanced budget or a surplus for 40 years. Now, over the year to June 30th, California's total tax take contracted by 35% from the previous year. But California's spending has not contracted. And as a result, California is faced with a shortfall of $26 billion. As a temporary expedient, the government of California is paying its way by means of credit vouchers, IOUs. They're turning out their own. It has effectively cut the salaries of 200,000 bureaucrats and government employees by forcing them to take 3 days a month off without pay. The administrative and legislative branches of the California government have been locked for months in a dispute on how to cover the shortfall. And as time runs out, California is no longer debating whether to cut its welfare state, but how much to cut it. Now, the latest estimates run between $15 billion in outright budget cuts and other means necessary to make up the rest, even if it dared. The California government could not make up the deficit through taxes. It faces outright an imminent shrinkage in the size of government itself. California has hit the welfare state wall. They've hit the wall. Well, so has Washington, D.C., although there are very few in Washington, D.C. who would admit it yet. Like the Treasury in Sacramento, the Treasury in Washington, D.C. also has an official debt limit. That limit has risen from $1.4 trillion in U.S. dollars to $12 trillion since the end of the last U.S. recession in 1982. The debt has risen by a bit more than $1.5 trillion since September the 30th, 2008. That's only 9 months ago. That's more than the total debt in 1982. Everyone from Mr. Obama to the politicians on both sides of the aisle in Congress verbally agree that this absurd blowout in debt is undesirable, unhealthy, and even unsustainable. But the federal government in Washington, unlike the government in California, has no legal constraints on the amount of debt that it can amass. Sacramento is printing vouchers as a temporary expedient. It does not call them money. Washington, D.C. is printing U.S. dollars and Treasury debt paper as the foundation of the national financial system, and it does call that money, and it insists that they be accepted as money. Have you ever thought about resisting Federal Reserve notes? Have you ever thought about refusing to take Federal Reserve notes for your work, for your labor? I know it's a wild new concept. We'll talk about that when we come back. But we're at the halfway point, and I have to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are promoting the newsletter, The Privateer. It's published in Australia, Queensland, Australia, put out by William A.M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland 4567, Australia. If you're online, go to www.the-privateer.com. If you want to send him an email, write it to capt@the-privateer.com. And if you want to call direct, you call 617-5471-1960. That's in Queensland, Australia. Now, talking about the huddled masses, he says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Most people and the vast majority of Americans would recognize that quote. It is a portion of a poem by Emma Lazarus, which is engraved within the pedestal, and it supports the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor. Now, 2 years ago, people all over the developed world, and in the United States in particular, would have laughed long and hard at anyone who dared to describe them as tired and huddled masses. Today, any such laughter is beginning to fade and fade fast. The reality of a prosperity based entirely on delayed repayment has now hit home. In the United States, unemployment is officially put at 9.5% of the workforce. Go back to the end of the last major U.S. recession in 1982 and then use the methods in place then to measure unemployment. And you will find that the real level of unemployment is 18 to 20%. In April of 2009, a record 33.8 million people in the United States received food stamps, up 20% from the total just 1 year earlier. Earlier this year, average U.S. home equity per household was estimated at about $50,000. Now remember, about one-third of U.S. households own their homes outright. This was less than half the figure of 3 years earlier. So 3 years ago, your house was worth $150,000, or your equity was, and today it's worth $50,000. So you have lost your household income here in America. You've lost two-thirds of it already. Two-thirds just evaporated. Coupled with your stocks and bonds and your automobiles and all the things that you own. Not just the value of your house now, but the average wealth of the average American has declined by 66%, 67% in just 3 years. That's mind-boggling. That didn't happen in 1929 to 37. We've never seen anything like this. This is brand new. Now, most of us, it hasn't hit home yet, but you know, it's going to. It's going to affect me, it's going to affect you and everybody else, whether we like it or not. And that's the unemployment story. Now listen to this. The increase in the U.S. savings rate is, of course, headline news everywhere. But arrears on loans of all descriptions have been setting new records every month and show no signs of slowing down. The biggest cause of this is job losses, but many people are still using whatever credit is still available to them to payday. Day-to-day, payday-to-payday, day-to-day expenses, even as they cut those expenses to the bone. Throughout the U.S., homelessness is setting records, with state-provided facilities already full. People are being put up in empty hotels, motels, and trailer courts all over the United States, and many spending up to 80% of their total income on rent. We've never seen anything like that in this country before. Now, does any of this sound like welfare to you? You know, the culprit is the welfare state, or more precisely, the means resorted to in order to make the welfare state possible. The man who gave legitimacy to the modern practices of government intervention by means of credit creation, his name was John Maynard Keynes. And he put it like this in 1919, early in his career, he said, there is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society than to debauch the currency. The process engages all of the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction, and it does it in a manner which not one man in a million is able to diagnose. Now, later in his career, he said not one person in 10,000 could recognize inflation. In 1919, he said not one in a million could understand the debauchery of the currency. Now, there's only 300 million people in the United States. Now, if what he says is true, there's only about 300 people in this country that can grasp the significance of that statement. The process engages all of the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society than to debauch the currency. That's already been done. And if you want to see how far the debauching of the currency has occurred, go back to 1930, a little bit before my 1945 example of the 10-cent ice cream cone. You go back to 1930, and a $20 gold piece and a $20 Federal Reserve note would buy the same thing. You could walk into John's Suit Shop in 1930 with a $20 bill, $20 piece of paper, or a $20 gold piece. You could have bought a Hickey Freeman suit with wingtip shoes, suspenders, a shirt, a tie, socks, underwear, and a belt. Suspenders. And that $20 gold piece or $20 bill would have had money left over, change back. Today, you can go into John's Suit Shop with a $20 Double Eagle, and still you can buy a Hickey Freeman suit, wingtip shoes, a tie, shirt, suspenders, and socks, and underwear. Now take your $20 Federal Reserve note into John's Suit Shop and see what you're going to get. You won't get a shirt. You might get a tie. You could probably buy a pair of socks. You might be able to buy the underwear. But you sure as hell can't buy a suit and shoes. Now that's what happened. We have lost 98% of the purchasing power of our money between 1930 and 2009. Boys and girls, we're only fighting over the last two cents. All of this stimulus and all these trillions of dollars and bailouts, hell, all we're talking about is the last 2 cents on the dollar. That's all you're out to say. You've already lost the 98 cents. The currency has already been debauched. The society has already been turned upside down. There's no going back. It's already been done. It's an accomplished fact. Now, Keynes was right. The existing basis of society, which Keynes grew up in, was one of political and economic freedom, supported as all political and economic freedom must do by sound money. There was no welfare state, no one minimal by today's standards, in the UK or US simply because government could not afford one. It was not just getting started on the road to a debauched currency. The end of the road was reached when all global money became nothing more than a glorified IOU in 1971. That marked the end of the rise in the standard of living of the huddled masses everywhere, and today the people are broke. Businesses are broke. All secondary levels of government are broke, and the only step left to be taken is the final collapse of the national governments around the world. Last step in the process. Now, this newsletter is tough to read. I mean, for most of you people out there, you probably won't be able to handle it, so don't waste your time on it. But there may be a few of you out there that can benefit from it. Oftentimes in class here, and the people that come to class are already pre-graded. Now, nobody comes to this law school as a liberal left-wing communist dingling. You know, everybody that comes here is already pretty well conservative and pretty well tuned in to the fact that the Federal Reserve is not federal. And yet, when students come in here, I will usually run off a copy of the International Forecaster for each new student and a copy of the Privateer. And at the end of the first day of class, I will pass those out and say, read this. This is your homework for tonight. Read these two newsletters. Sometimes I'll throw in a copy of the Money Changer. Not always. I've been doing this now for 10 years. I'd say about 10 years. I have yet to meet one student who read both newsletters as his homework assignment in one night. And when we asked them, well, how much of it did you read last night? Most could only read 3 or 4 pages of each. That's it. This is such bad news. It is so hard to grasp, so difficult to assimilate into your mind. You will not be able to read these 12 pages in one sitting. Almost guaranteed. It'll scare the living bejesus out of you. But it's the only reality that I see left in the world. If there's any other realities out there, write me a letter, tell me where you found it. I'd like to read it. The Bible deals with reality, and that's why people can't read the Bible. The International Forecaster deals with reality, that's why people can't read it. The Privateer deals with reality. The average communist of America cannot read these newsletters in one sitting. About the best that I've seen so far is by the end of the week, most of the students, when you press them, will say, yeah, I got through it. Then I say, what'd you think about that? Most of them will say, it just takes my breath away. I don't know what to say. I've never seen or heard anything like it. That's what reality is all about. That's why when you get into the scripture and you get to Revelation, say, chapter 13, talking about the mark of the beast, hell, you people all have the mark of the beast. It's called Social Security. You can't buy, sell, or trade without it. Go to the bank and try to borrow money without a Social Security number and see what happens. Go down and try and pay your income tax without your Social Security number. No, just tell them, I don't have a Social Security number. You can't function in American society without a Social Security number. Well, I shouldn't say you can't, I do, but it's difficult, and it's not easy. No, it's not impossible, but it's not easy. All right, so one of the most painful outcomes of this century-long obsession with the miraculous powers of government is that at the end, we are left with the huddled masses once again. Sadly, there is no other outcome in prospect for those who choose to rely on government for their welfare. Last night on the Lair News Hour, they had a little segment on there, and they were showing the poor people of California. And then they, for instance, they had some people of Down's disease, Down's syndrome. And they had them in a workshop environment, probably 10 or 15 of these people. They're all supported by state welfare. And they were talking to the administrator of this agency, and he said, our funding has been cut by 80%. He said, we can't continue. And of course, the question arises, well, what are you going to do with these 15 or 20 people with Down syndrome? They cannot function in the real world. I mean, you can put them out here on the street if you want to. There isn't one. They can't count. They couldn't pay their electric bill. One fellow who has Down syndrome, who was in there, they ask him, you know, how he gets by, and he says he has a caseworker that comes in once a week, balances his checkbook for him, pays his bills for him, then he helps him write his checks or whatever he's done. He works at this center. Now, what's going to happen in California when they run out of money? Those people are going to be out on the street. Can that happen in America? It's in the process right now. Wake up and smell the coffee. It's never happened before, and so when you see this stark prospect, not just in California, but nationwide, not just here in America, but worldwide, you people in the Philippines, do you think that you're immune from this? You think that when California hits the wall, that you people in the Philippines are going to continue to live your lives just like nothing had happened? You think your standard of living is going to go up, stay the same, or go down? Think about that. Now, this is the issue. It is the one which all of the heads of state summits keep sidestepping. It is the one which has called forth all of the suggestions that the U.S. dollar be dethroned as the global reserve currency. It is the issue which sooner or later will have to be faced. The longer this discussion is postponed, the worse the situation we will have to be faced, when it comes to pass. Now, it's been postponed and postponed and postponed, and they're postponing it a little bit longer, I don't know, a year or 2 years or whatever it happens to be, but one of these days, the reality is going to hit home a little harder. It's mounting. It's getting worse. And so people call here at the law school and say, well, what do you do about it? Well, I've got a solution for it. I'm one of the few guys in the country that's not complaining. I'm not looking forward to it. And I don't want you to think, you know, I'm sitting here like Simon Legree rubbing my hands and saying, ah, good. No, not by a long shot. But I mentioned the last program. I said there's another model out here. It's called the Ten Commandment Model. Next program, we'll take a look at this Ten Commandment model as we look at arbitrage. We look at just weights and balances. That is what the creator of the universe told us to use. Instead of this debauched currency, instead of these Federal Reserve notes, instead of this paper money and stocks and bonds, the creator of the universe said, don't do that. Use gold and silver coin. And of course, you know, we the people on planet Earth, we're all smarter than God, aren't we? I mean, when was the last time you ever listened to God? So obviously we're all a little bit smarter than God. But I just wanted to put this out in front of you so that you could see that, well, maybe God ain't as dumb as we thought he was. Maybe he's got a couple of points working on his side that might be of some benefit. Now, finally, here's the one man or the one woman in a million. Page 12, last page. Diagnosing the system made possible by currency debauchment is not particularly difficult. It has been done concisely and precisely by eminent economists and students of politics and history for centuries. Stripped down to its barest and most basic fundamentals, it resides in such folk sayings as, nobody gets any if there ain't none, that's one, transfall, that is, T-A-N-S-T-A-A-A-F-L, transfall, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And then the third one is, put not your faith in princes. So nobody gets any if there ain't none, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, and put not your faith in princes. Now, here at the Privateer, we have been doing all we can to turn our subscribers into that one man or one woman in a million for 25 years. Many other eminent newsletter writers have been doing the same thing, some for longer than we have. The antithesis of a welfare state is a state of economic freedom and political liberty based on sound money and unhampered markets. There is no middle ground. If the last 2 years have benefited men and women in any way, they have done so in an awakening, in many of them the beginnings of a realization that giving up freedom for security is a sure means of ending up with neither. The lesson has been taught before in history, and it is now being taught again. The most important thing that any of us can do to protect ourselves from the collapse of the welfare state is to remove from our lives, as far as we possibly can, any reliance on government for anything. I'm going to underline that, anything. Boys and girls, you want to avoid taking anything from government. In fact, there was an old-timey prophet, his name was Abraham, had a battle, and the king of Sodom came up to him and said, hey, you take this and I'll take that. And Abraham said, I won't take anything from you, nothing. Not so much as a shoe latchet or a thread from you, King. That's an important principle of economics and of politics. You don't accept anything from government. Above all, do not look to government for any grants, loans, subsidies, transfer payments, restraint on competitors' trade, or anything else which is an infringement on the functioning of the only real market that there is, and it's called the free market. A mass refusal to accept these services would hasten the day when they would no longer be rendered. And I don't take Social Security if everybody in America simply woke up tomorrow morning and said, screw it, we're not going to take it. Then they wouldn't be collecting the taxes. They wouldn't be taking it. They wouldn't be paying it. And Social Security would be dead. And we'd all be a step further in our lives to get government the hell out of our business and out of our lives. It's not going to happen. I'm not sitting here suggesting it. But I'm not going to take Social Security. And I'm not going to rely upon the government. And when it collapses, I won't miss it. Never had it. Don't depend upon it. And when it's taken away, I won't miss it. Now, the poor guy that's over here dependent upon Social Security, and he can't make his payments without it, he's in trouble, isn't he? Now, global stock markets have now absorbed the oceans of stimulus pumped out by governments this year, and they're faltering. The markets which remain strongest are those whose economies rely to a greater extent on the production of real economic goods, specifically the Asian markets. The markets where the growing weakness is most pronounced are those where economies rely on production by way of borrowing of money, and in this regard, it should be noted that the U.S. stock markets are among the weakest of the world. Our stock markets are not strong, boys and girls, because they've recovered to 8,500. They are the weakest in the world, and they're going to collapse, just like the welfare state economy. Hey, we're out of time. I've got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.